everybody. It's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Can't wait to jump into today's guest, who certainly fits that bill. But before we do, I want to direct your attention to my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And I've got my film, Emmy Award winning Best Picture, Searching for the Summit. You can check it out there. It directs you over to NFL 360. So fortunate that they filmed my amazing journey up and down Mount Everest and back. And what a beautiful story at the end of the day. And if you haven't seen it, check it out. Again, Best Picture, Emmy. I've got the hardware coming, so I'm excited about that. Number two is I've done over 250 episodes going on now 2 or 3 years. And I've got so many amazing people doing incredible things. And it always inspires me to talk to these people like we're going to talk to today, just what they're doing, how they've gone about life and their success. And we all need that. I'm not the, or you're not the only one. I need it too, to jack me up and keep me going up and down these mountains. And finally, we continue to raise money for Amelius Everest. All proceeds go to Higher Ground. It's all about empowering others. And that's what we aim to do. We show the film. We've done these campaigns with Amelia, so on and so forth. And I think we have something coming either to the south down in Mississippi, which I hope Matt would be included with. Matt's coming on in just a minute. And in Southern California with some pretty cool people. So tune into that. If you do go on to that link, philanthropy, Amelia's Everest, 100% of all proceeds go directly to Higher Ground. It doesn't come to me in any way. So on that note, let's get into today's awesome guest. His name, Matt Warren. Matt, I've met you 2 years ago down in the great state of Mississippi, the little town of Greenville, at a wonderful common mutual friend, Steve Azar. He's another Delta Blues singer, in your case, singer, songwriter. Hope I got that right. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, brother. I'm excited to be on here, and it's a real honor. Thanks for asking.
Well, listen, you know, let's just rewind this, because we're going to talk about your life. We're going to talk about dreams. We're going to talk about failures. You know, we talked about the name of the show is Finding Your Summit. There's peaks, the valleys. You've been in valleys. You've been in peaks. I've been in a whole, probably more valleys than you've been. And I've been on a couple peaks, and it's fun when you're standing on the top. But, you know, to develop that character over time, you have to go through some stuff, right, that builds that character, that builds that grit, that builds those other things that you ultimately are made of. But I want to go back just 2 years now, and I want to tell you my experience for the audience. So there's a common friend of Matt and mine. His name is Steve Azar. He's a Delta Country Blues. He's had a number of hits. He's a singer. He's a songwriter, just like our guest today. But he throws a golf event, a fundraiser, and then we're fortunate, the people that come down, to be able to listen to these you know, amazing voices that Steve, he calls friends, up on stage on a Friday night. And I was sitting back with my girl, Dars, and I was this guy, Matt Warren, was introduced. He came up and belted out. And we're looking at each other like, oh, my God, this guy sings like a flipping angel. I mean, so talented. And afterwards, I said something to you, and we didn't really talk too much after that. And this last year, a couple months ago, we got to talk a lot more. And again, you got up and you sang a beautiful song. And so, I mean, again, where did this love, when did you figure out that when you opened your mouth, you have this magic that could actually come out? And it's, I mean, it sounded pretty sweet.
Gosh, that's an interesting question. I've kind of got a funny story about that, because I wasn't really sure that I had a beautiful voice. And the reason being, you know, as a kid, I was a product of what my parents listened to. I can remember being, you know, sitting in front of a record player, flipping records, you know, from one side to the next, while my mom was in the kitchen or doing whatever she was doing. And that was kind of my babysitter, was the record player. And so from a very young age, I loved music, and I would lock myself in my room as I got older, and I had a wiffle ball bat, and I'd stand in there and, you know, air guitar, and I'd sing. And I always thought that I had I don't know if I thought I had a good voice, but I enjoyed singing. I thought that I could sing pretty much to anything. And then in the seventh.
Okay, go ahead. You're going to say the seventh grade. Okay.
Yeah, in the seventh grade, I tried out for the church choir, and I was the only kid that didn't make it. So I was devastated, you know, because, well, A, you know, everybody should make the church choir. I mean, you know, we're all just, you know, praising Jesus. But when they, you know, I thought to myself, maybe I'm not a good singer, you know, if I'm the only kid that didn't make the choir. So I was a little confused because I knew that I enjoyed singing and I thought that I was a pretty good singer. And then it wasn't until the 10th grade that I had the courage to try out again for chorus in high school. And it was basically because all my buddies I played football with, you had to have an elective. And the reasoning for doing chorus was all my buds said there, all the cute girls were in there and it was a lot of fun. So I got the courage up to try out. And I think I tried out with Georgia On My Mind by Ray Charles, and my chorus teacher, Mr. James Story, he said, "Where have you been?" And so that was at that point that I thought, okay, well, maybe I was right. Maybe I can sing. And then he gave me a solo that Christmas. We had a Christmas show at my high school, at Gallatin High School. And he let me sing Jingle Bell Rock. And that was the first time I'd ever sang in front of a group of people. And I actually didn't even tell my mom and dad that I was going to be singing until the night before. And I remember telling my dad, I said, "I think you guys should come to the Christmas program tomorrow night. I've got a solo." And my dad just looked at me and, "Solo at what?" You know, and I said, "Well, I'm Jingle Bell Rock." And so that was the first time. That was it wasn't until then really that I thought that I had a decent voice, and I guess the approval of the crowd after the cheers, you know, that kind of was what hooked me. You know, I was like you. I was an athlete, a four sport athlete my whole life, and you know, a team player. And it wasn't until I stood up on that stage by myself and sang a song that I was hooked.
Yeah, I can tell you that really quickly that in high school, my senior year, after football season, myself and some other football guys tried out as a cast for the musical Brûlé Gudule. And I was going to be in the village. And I had to sing in just the audition. I had to sing in front of 100 people, and I was terrified. And I knew that was not my place. But that was my story. So I want to mix this in. So now you get up on stage, you're singing Jingle Bell Rock, you know, you finally like, hey, maybe I can do this, you know, so you got a little confidence boost, you know, going. And then I know we're kind of fast forwarding the clock a bit, but over the arc of time,
yeah,
you know, you find your place and you start writing songs. So where does the connection come from? Your okay, I got a voice. Now I actually, rather than sing Jingle Bell Rock and all these other, you know, songs that you get up, it's like karaoke night, but you're going to create your own. Like, yeah. Where did that inspiration come from?
So I knew that I wanted to be, my ultimate dream is to be the lead singer in a band. I mean, that has never changed. And so I had a band. I had a cover band, and we were basically signed to play like frat houses and bars in the SEC, you know, at Alabama or LSU or Tennessee. And the band broke up, and a couple of the guys wanted to go do a thing where they were playing original music. And I realized pretty fast that if I wanted to continue chasing my dream of being a lead singer in a band, I was going to have some songs of my own, because I think my thought process back then was, and it's still this way, no great musician is going to want to just play covers. So you're going to have your own songs. And that I started writing songs out of necessity, because I needed a band. And that's really what put me on the path to writing songs. And at the time, you know, I still don't know how to read or write music. I know what chords I'm playing and I can hear them. I was just imitating Van Morrison and Willie Nelson, you know, generally speaking, because I would listen to some of their records. And how I started writing songs was I would just copy the chord structure from like a Willie Nelson song or a Van Morrison song, something pretty simple, you know, a Tom Petty song. I would copy those chords and the structure and the rhythm. And then I would learn how to put my own words and my own melody over top of those chords and that chord structure and that rhythm. And then I would change the rhythm up a little bit. And so I would, you know, create my own songs. And I realized that it was okay to do that because they had copied, you know, Petty and Willie Nelson and, you know, Van Morrison. They were just copying people that they loved. I mean, there's only X amount of chords.
Right.
So, and there's only, you know, X amount of subjects to sing about and to write about. And so I thought, well, if they can do it, so can I. And that's really how I started writing songs, was just copying the artist that I was into.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Just sidebar to that, and we're going to jump right back onto it. I've been intrigued about some of these lawsuits that are going out of saying, trying to, there's a lawyer that's out there in particular trying to, I can't remember who the artist is, but saying that this so-and-so stole songs, right? And if you listen to it, I guess you could like draw some comparisons in there. But at the end of the day, I don't know how you exactly do that, just because you said there's an infinite, which is X amount of chords, and those chords have to follow some structure. And there's 80 million trillion songs that are out there. And so, you know, trying to create new songs. So, I mean, you could potentially make an argument every single time somebody writes a song that they're infringing on somebody.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like, it's not exactly like this, but to compare it to something that you are very familiar with, you know, each receiver has his own way of running a route, but it's still a route at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, you're still talking about three chords in the truth. You're still, there's only so many instruments you can use. There's only so many, you know, like I said before, only so many subjects. So it is getting strange. And I think that the reason we're seeing more lawsuits, or one of the reasons, is because the money streams and the revenue is drying up because of streaming. It's not like it was in the 90s or even the early 2000s or previous to when, if you, you know, when you and I were growing up, if you wanted to listen to music, you either had to turn on the radio, or the only way you could get it was to purchase, you know, a single or a tape or a cassette or a LP or a
8-track. Remember those?
8-track for you guys. I'm old enough I had an 8-track tape player in my 1980 Grand Marquee that was my own.
There you go.
But I think that because the money revenues are starting to dry up, people are starting to get sue happy. And I actually heard the other day that, you know, a lot of songwriters and artists are selling their catalog. I know that Bob Dylan just sold his for 300 plus million. But I heard that some of these companies that are buying catalogs are actually hiring lawyers to go through the catalogs and see which songs sound like other songs and find out who wrote them first.
Go get those guys.
Go get those guys. And that's pretty scary.
I know. Well, listen, I don't want to go down that path. I want to jump it back onto you, but it's just like when you said that. So you're in high school, Jingle Bell Rock, you're a singer. Now you start a band. You realize that the path going forward is to write your own song. So you figure that out. you start to put a few things down, and now you go on and you've had a number of hits. Now, I don't think you've had hits in terms of you singing those songs,
right? But
one of the models, which I've been told, is like you want to be the writer of the song. It doesn't matter really who sings it. If you sing it, it's great. It'd be great for your career, but you just want to, you know, write songs and have Tim McGraw and these other guys pick them up. And that's where you can make some serious dough. And that has happened to you. Now, how many times?
I have only had 3 singles. I had one single that was by a guy named Robert Randolph in the Family Band, and Darius Rucker sang it.
Yep.
And that record was up for a Grammy in the blues category. We did not win. Still an honor to have a song that was on
nomination. Yeah.
The other 2 singles that I've had have been with Gary Allen. The first one was called Learning How to Bend. It went to number 10. And then the second one was called Every Storm Runs Out of Rain.
Yeah.
And that went to number 1, and it was up for ACM for Song of the Year. It's by far my biggest song I've ever had. Yeah. Definitely the one that paid the most. I've had a couple other, you know, now the format is people are releasing songs and not even making records. So I actually have a song that just came out last week by a guy named Jake Hoot, who won The Voice. He was the season 17 winner. And the song is called Had It to Lose. And I wrote that with Jake and my friend Matt Nolan. But those, you know, the other 3, really the Gary Allen stuff is the biggest payouts that I've had, because he's a major label
within the country.
Within the country, yes.
Yeah. Well, you're a Tennessee boy, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, look, how many hits I've had? 0. And so you have to be at the plate to be in the game, right? That's always say this, and that's what, so much when you start talking about fear of jumping into that, of like my fear of getting on stage and singing in front of people, I mean, massive. And so that was not my path. You know, that has been your path. And I think at the end of the day, you have to be committed to the end goal, because your next great song could be tomorrow, could be today.
Yes.
Right. You just don't know when that thing is going to come. But if you don't get up the plate, you keep swinging, you'll never know unless you try.
Absolutely. And I mean, dude, I'm scared every day. I mean, I get nervous every time I perform. I figure that the day that I'm not nervous, is that I don't care anymore. Yeah. If I wanted to succumb to the worries of what ifs in life, I mean, sometimes I think I'm never going to write another song. You know, sometimes I think that, that I might have already written my greatest song and it may never get cut. I mean, who knows? But you have to show up. And actually, I'm in this phase right now. A big part of my path that you know about is I went to rehab 3.5 years ago and got sober. Mm-hmm. And so this is my 20th year in the business, writing on a publishing, you know, writing professionally. And so for 17 or 16 and a half of those years, I was a user, you know, pot, alcohol, prescription drugs, recreational drugs. And there weren't many writing appointments or many times that I sat down to write in the past in those 16 and a half years where I wasn't on some substance. So
can I ask you this question? Because, you know, you go back to like Jimi Hendrix and, you know, when he's lighting his guitar on fire, when he's on LSD, does it make you, or the Beatles when they're in their creative, did you feel like where you're at now with full clarity versus where you were in some altered state? I don't know what it was, but do you feel like that in some way gives you more creativity when you're like your mind is altered like that, or what's your opinion?
You know, I think for each person, it's going to be different. I do think that there is, you know, when you are in some altered state of mind, there is a window. You know, for me, I think the reason I liked to smoke pot when I would write was there was like this window, a 10-minute window of what I thought was brilliance or whatever. But you, I had to have a recorder with me because I'd forget it, you know.
Yeah, right.
But I also think that that potentially is just a big lie. I mean, you know, for years I was addicted to different substances, and I used to think that, well, these help me to create, these help me to focus and help me to write. And, you know, my the drug that I had the biggest issue with was Adderall, and it's doctor prescribed, and they do give it to patients, you know, for attention deficit disorder. And, you know, that drug does help you to concentrate on whatever it is you're doing. But if what you're doing is folding socks, then you'll be concentrating on that. So, you know, for me, I started to do other things, and I wasn't focused on writing music. But back to answer your question, I think that for some people, there is this fairy tale world or this super creative place that they are able to go when they get high, but you can go there sober, and you can go to other new places, other places that you can't go to when you are high. Now, if I'm being honest, I'm still figuring out who this guy is as a sober artist and a sober writer, because when I was in addiction, I was such a mess that I wrote from that place. And so I was always struggling. I was always emotionally just broken. And it was very easy for me to write from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm healthy and I'm leaning into my higher power and leaning on God and Jesus, you know, that I can't really talk about my path without mentioning my spirituality and my relationship with the Lord. So now that I'm healthy and I have that I'm leaning into and that I'm following, I'm happy and I'm healthy. And so I'm still learning how to write from that perspective.
I think, you know, the whole thing with that, Matt, is this, my opinion, is that, I wanted to start off by, like, let's talk about your peaks, right? We'll get back to your peak, but I wanted to start about your peaks. You know, you started to find success and singer and people liking, you know, what was coming out of your mouth, and you started to sing. So you had a bunch of peaks, and then you fell into this common path.
Yep.
I wouldn't say of just artists, but certainly you're kind of in that space. You're playing late in bars and everybody's drinking, having a good time. And so you're doing all that. And then, like many, you know, you fall into a valley. So now you're climbing back. And to me, when I haven't been in my valleys, have not been related to drugs or alcohol or anything, but just, you know, we all go through our own struggle, whatever that might be. And like, if you're focused on what your intention is going to be, if you're focused on, you know, there's blue sky ahead, even though you don't even know what that blue sky ahead.
Yeah.
If you're focused on whatever you do, I've had a couple wins in my life doing different things, but that's over, right? What's ahead? What am I going to do next? You know, how can I like propel myself in that direction? And that gives me hope about other things. And I would like to think, like, what I'm hearing from you is kind of the same thing, where you finally found peace within yourself. You know, you don't have to, you know, be self-combustible to be great. Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's your blue sky, you know, whatever that might be, of trying to find the next best song. You know, I think you and I should write a song called The Summit Song. Right. But it's you know, like the people that you meet and the influences that you have. But again, it goes back to that first thing about, you know, stepping up the plate and swinging the bat. You got to be at the plate.
Yes, that's what I was saying all that to get to this. Even though I don't feel as creative as I once was, and it doesn't have anything to do with the drugs and alcohol, it also has a lot to do with, I've been doing this for 20 years. And, you know, you're only as good as the subject that you have to sing about or to write about. And so if you are a paid professional songwriter and you go Monday through Friday and you write, you know, for a publishing company, I mean, you can get, I mean, burnout is a real thing. I mean, you know,
for sure.
And so, you know that. And so I also think that I'm just going through this period right now where, I'm just living, I'm enjoying, who I am today in my sobriety. And even though here's the point, even though I don't feel like showing up some days because I want to do something else, I'm still showing up and I'm still working. And I'm very fortunate that I have friends and co-writers that I've been working with for a long time who know what I'm going through, and they're more than happy to still get together. And a lot of times I'm getting songs that I would have never guessed that I'd, you know, that we'd be getting because they weren't my, you know, the title or the idea wasn't mine, but I'm showing up. That's the point I wanted to make. And you're right. You can't be in the game without stepping up to the plate. And that's okay.
I had this conversation, I think it was yesterday, with my buddy Jim Moore, who's now the head coach at the University of Connecticut. He's been a long time in the NFL head coach. And, you know, what we were talking about is, and this is related only to my own situation, but, you know, and there's no cameras, there's no film crew, there's no, you know, people with money waiting out, like every single day, every single morning. You know, the difference, I'm just telling you, between some of the things I've done and others is consistency with daily discipline, consistency with daily discipline, consistency with daily. And it does seem monotonous, but I know that puts me in the best position to win.
Yes. So lately, since March, I have gotten back into the gym and I started running. And, you know, like I said, I was a four sport athlete in high school. I also my degree is to teach health and wellness in K-12 PE. And I love sports. I'm an athlete. And that part of my life has been gone for years. And so in March, I started working out and running. And there were days I did not want to do it. And I just started showing up. I ran my first 5K on Memorial Day. I never thought I would ever be the kind of guy that could run a 5K, and I end up finishing eighth in my age group, and I finished 111 out of 483 runners, and was really I was really proud of myself because I could have quit working out or I could have stopped running when I thought that, hey, I'm looking in the mirror, I see improvement, I'm just going to take today off. It's the mundane, it's the consistency like you just spoke of, and the discipline that has helped me to get to where I'm at now with my exercise goals. And that will also bleed over into other aspects of my life, the discipline and the consistency.
Yep. Well, one of the things you're going to find too is you know, not only is the mental health, because you're out doing something positive, right? It's activating all the endorphins in your body, but there's also a lot of creativity that goes through. So when you're one of those 5K that you're talking about, that's going 2-3 miles. And as you're running those miles, you're not just thinking about, oh, my feet on the floor. You know, you're also, other things come in, relationships and maybe music ideas, or I should have called this guy, or what's going on with Steve Azar. You know, there's a million and one things that go on in your brain that help activate that re-tap into that creativity.
Absolutely.
So listen, what I'd love to do, and you pick it, but you've got a beautiful song that went to number one, Every Storm Runs Out of Rain. By the way, I'm from Seattle, so I know all about rain. Or this new song that you just cranked out recently that you're really proud of. You pick. Just give us a little sampler.
Well, I'll play you a song that it's not that new song, but it's on my new record that's coming out. And it's also on the Gary Allen record that just came out. We're not sure if it's going to be a single or not. We'll see. But it's called The Hard Way. was looking for my exit on the interstate sign, but the wind went and blew it down. I took a wrong right turn, about a half a mile back. My directions all spun around. Through the sideways rain and the love and the shame, I watched the sunlight disappear. In the sun so black, said you're never gonna make it back till you do some hard time out here. Well, God gave me the rain to wash away my pain and to learn from bad mistakes I've made the hard way.
Love that, man. That's beautiful. That was beautiful. What is that song about?
That song is about sometimes in life, the best lessons are learned through hardship and adversity the hard way. At least, you know, at least for me, that's been when I've learned the most, is when I didn't want to.
Yeah, you know, I've had a lot of people on the show. Again, finding your summit, going through adversity and finding their way out, right? And this one lady I had about 100 episodes said this correctly. And this is after her son had been, was like 22, 23 at the time, had been stoned to death down in Somalia.
Okay. Yeah.
So think of the pain of a mother going through something like that. And she said, there's no way around it. You have to go through it and in it. And I've been in the same spot. I've been in the spot many times. And you want that to go, and you like doing everything you can to like shove that rock out of the way and get it. But sometimes it takes 10 years. Sometimes it takes 5 years. You know, there is no, but you look back on those times and you're saying that was the best thing that could have ever happened to me, even though it sucked. Yeah. Right. But I learned so many great lessons, and I was humbled, and people, you know, this person or that person came to my rescue and were there. And maybe that, like the beautiful song you just sang, gave me inspiration to put me in a place where I am today.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a really long story, but the things that led me to the point to where I knew I needed to go to rehab, that whole process was just completely life shattering to me in my view, in my eyes. Yeah. And had I not gone through that, I'd still probably be out using, you know, and just as lost as I could possibly be. But I really had to go through the fire to get to where I'm at now. And I would not ever take that back. I would never go back to my old self. And I'm so grateful for the hardships that I had to endure and overcome.
Well, you become a stand-up guy. You become a man of integrity. You say what you do and you do what you say. And you know, other people around you, they notice that, and they notice that shift. And that's a big deal. It's a big deal. And hopefully to you, it's a big deal. I think it is a big deal. And, you know, your life's journey, you know, every single day, it's just a new thing. I mean, you know, I mean, we talked about the very, very beginning. I talked about, you know, this Emmy that I just won for Best Picture. I'd never started off climbing mountains. I climbed the mountains because I was in pain and suffering. And I had to go through my journey. And I was just like, that was my rehab center, right?
Yeah.
To get up and then these big ass mountains.
Yeah.
And, you know, like 10 years later, I'm standing on stage in front of Bob Costas and all these other people winning, you know, like where would that, I mean, it's so impossible that like, I mean, I don't know what to say about it. It's so impossible. It's like there was no intention for that ever to happen. I didn't do it. You know, I just was there, you know, the reasons for it. And so, again, I think if you're authentic to yourself and what you're trying to get through and where you're trying to go and heal, and we're all on that path, we're constantly all healing in some different way, there can be magical things on the other side. And I think you're experiencing that right now. And I'm just grateful and thankful that you're willing to accept my friendship and to be on this podcast. And anytime, what you should do right now is after you need to strap on those tennis shoes, and we're only 4.5 hours away. You're down in Salt Lake City, 4.5 hours by car, but I think you start running, you could be here by like next Thursday.
Oh man. I'd have to hydrate for that.
Well, you can bring a couple of camelbacks, but listen, where can people find your you and your beautiful music?
So I've got a record. It's under Matt Warren. The name of the record is self-titled. But wherever you listen to your music, whether it's on iTunes or Spotify or Apple or however you listen to it, you can find my record on there, Matt Warren, self-titled. And also I have a band, my new band called Goodfoot. And that record is about to come out. It's called the Park City Sessions. And I'm really proud of this record. And it's me and four of my best buddies in the world. We came up here to Park City, actually to where I'm staying at right now, my friend Ben Anderson and Paige Anderson's house, and they have a studio here. We made a record, and that record is all about my process from where I was in addiction to where I am now. And that record's going to be available for people to download and to stream and listen. Hopefully by the end of the summer, it's done being mixed and the artwork is done. We're just in the process of getting it out there. So Matt Warren, self-titled, and Goodfoot, the Park City Sessions. And also my very, very first record that I ever made that got me signed to my first publishing deal in Muscle Shoals is that band is called Papa Joe. And the name of the record is called Storybook Ending. And it's also on all your streaming platforms and download platforms.
There he is, man. He's on his way. He's been on his way, and he's got great things ahead of him. So listen, Matt, totally appreciate you coming on. Look forward to seeing you next year in Mississippi.
Yes.
And getting caught up and seeing where, you know, your career has gone to in this record. And I look forward to hearing these songs. And again, just very grateful for you accepting to come on and being very, very authentic of who you are.
Dude, thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate you, brother. You're a real blessing to me and to all who know you. God bless you, my friend.
All right, buddy. There he is, the one, the only, Matt Warren. Thank you so much.